Hold on to your butts, it's time for a new episode of Destroy All Culture, a sonic death ray from Dimension X that sounds exactly like a weekly podcast hosted by Adam P. Nave and Aiden Morgan. Exposure to Destroy All Culture is 100% fatal, so we put it on the internet. Now listen and die! Lethal effects may take up to 75 years. And here we are with episode 129 of Destroy All Culture. I'm Adam P. Nave, and with me as always is Aiden Morgan.
Yep, whoa, you did it.
I didn't want to say it. I was just like, we're just going to pretend that that's normal now.
I shouldn't have even said anything at all.
It's all good. You know, it's not often that I actually manage to fucking get the intro right. So, right. Hey.
Nice. And, you know, it occurred to me that you always start off with saying, and we're back, or and we're here.
Right.
But you never say anything like, but we're here.
It's true.
I don't know
I've
why.
I've thought about, like, different ways to do the, like, you know. Like, I think I've occasionally, like, welcome to whatever.
Yeah.
But I figured, like, we have that little intro that kind of introduces the podcast. And
yes.
It's like, and then we're back, because we were here before last week, if you were listening. That's my theory, at least.
And then you could say, therefore. Like, I'm just giving you some
now I'm going to try to, like, think of something weird to do next week that's going to fuck us both up.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
So, speaking of, and we're back.
And we are.
We can just kick this off, because we kind of talk about before we start recording. CW did early renewals on a bunch of shows.
It seems like almost all of them. Like even Dynasty got a renewal. So Dynasty, Adam.
Yeah, like Dynasty, Charmed. Let me see. This is like there were like 10 of them.
Yeah, Riverdale, of course.
Well, right, and that's it. I was going to mention, like, the Riverdale, all the CW stuff.
Right. All the
you know, Arrow, Flash, Warner, Supergirl, yeah. Black Lightning, Legends.
The Arrowverse Returns, yeah.
Legacies, which I've never even seen.
I think that's supposed to be a Vampire Diary spinoff. Mm.
Or maybe and, of course, spin-off. Supernatural. Which
yes.
is coming back for its 15th goddamn season.
How do they do it? How do they keep doing it? Have
it
they
is,
not
in fact, Supernatural.
Have they not run out of Supernatural things? The only Supernatural
they really
thing
have, like I said, I've been enjoying the season again. Like, but my worry, and we've talked about this, my worry is like the first five seasons were really good.
Oh.
Then the next five were not.
Yeah.
And this will be 11, 12, 13, 14, like 15 would be the last good season before they turn again. So I'm just like, maybe we end with 15.
Maybe.
Like, don't do it to me again.
It's weird that you can say of a because I remember I started watching that show back when it started. I did not think I would ever be able to say, well, those five seasons were good, but those five seasons were pretty bad.
Right.
Like that sort of longevity was not what I expected from from this show.
But again, I think like it holds. Like I haven't gone back and rewatched it, obviously, because there's way too much and it's still running.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, honestly, like 15 seasons, having 10 of them be really good, engaging, fun seasons, and just kind of having the middle sag there is not bad.
Yeah,
that's
no,
remarkable,
I mean,
frankly.
I mean, yeah, it's good to see a show that you sort of love, but you sort of watch and you're like, well, this was better once, and seeing it sort of do a turnaround is kind of heartening. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that turnaround really, because I was ready to mark out right before it turned around.
Yeah, and I mean, I pretty much had, and the only reason I started watching it again at all was because you had said, hey,
right.
Aiden, it's getting good, so I dropped back in, and I'm like, lo and behold, it was, and I've...
Yeah, and I think it, like, re-energized me even more, just because shows don't get that chance, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
So yeah, no, it's, again, like, I think part of the key to the last bunch of seasons has been playing with the longevity. You know, playing with the fact that, like, the audience... And these characters have been around for so long, and the fan base is at this point baked in, right? Like, I mean, yes, I came in like season 9, but how many? It's a drop in a bucket, right? Like new viewers at this point for them,
yeah,
has to be. So you can really just kind of echo stuff without mentioning it,
yeah,
as much, and it just it invites, I think, better watching from the long-term people. It keeps you engaged because now you feel like there's this thing, right? That, like, only people who've sat there for 15 years in whatever form, you know, obviously I haven't sat there 15 years, but, like, 5 or 6, like really get. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's a show that, bizarrely enough, does reward really like long-term viewing.
Right.
Which is not.
And I
think
you need to have like 15 seasons to do that.
True.
Which is why you don't see it often. You know, I don't know, maybe like NYPD Blue, which is, or CIS, whatever the hell show it is, that's like done like 15,000 seasons now. I don't know.
One of the Law and Orders, CSI,
yeah.
Is that the one? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
One of the things that was making me laugh, I mentioned I want to talk about really briefly, is that this coming week, right? Like, because, you know, we're recording on the weekend, and this next week is the 150th episode of Arrow. Now, what's interesting is that, like, if you go to the CW schedule site, which I do just see, like, you know, like, Supergirl, it doesn't have a new episode this week. Because of football.
Right.
But I was like, are they skipping the rest of the week for everything else? And I was like, okay, you know, they're not, that's fine. But it mentions in the episode description, like, 150th episode of Arrow. And it mentions the episode of Supernatural. And it doesn't mention the fact that I believe this is the 300th episode of Supernatural this week, too.
Right. This is the one where Jeffrey Dean Morgan...
Lebanon, yeah. And well, that's the thing. It's like the title Lebanon, that's why I noticed it. But I'm like, how is it that your episode description for like Arrow, you're like, it's the 150th episode, yay, it's Supernatural. You're just like, whatever. Like, you don't even mention the 300th.
this is all good. This is all fun now.
Yeah, I made a joke on Twitter a while ago. That Arrow was going to celebrate its 150th episode and Supernatural was celebrating its 150th season.
Nice. Believe I missed that. I tell you, I deleted my Facebook altogether.
Oh, good on you.
Yeah, it is gone now.
I kind of want to. I just still have just enough people who I can only keep up with that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I just... What I did was I sort of looked at all my friends on Facebook and looked at all the ones that I couldn't keep up with outside of Facebook. And then, you know, and then I sent them messages to say, hey, I'm leaving Facebook, but here's my, you know, find me on Twitter, or here's my email and my phone number if you want to get in touch with me. And I realized that of the hundreds of friends, only about 5 or 6 people qualified.
Yeah, there aren't that many people. I mean, also for me, it's promotional stuff.
Of course.
But yeah, I kind of envy it. Anyway, so among those renewals, notice, of course, is Legends is getting a season 5.
Woohoo!
Which for me, like, they just finished filming, by the way, for season 4, if you didn't catch it.
Oh, did not.
And it leads to, like, I mean, obviously we still have, like, a bunch of seasons to come in April, and we don't know, but I'm, like, already going, like, are they keeping Constantine? You know,
question. Like, yeah, I mean, frankly, the Legends renewal is really the one that I care about.
Right. And I think going into Crisis, like, I think next year's going to be really interesting for the DC stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. So if they're keeping up with Arrow, I sort of wondered if you know, what's-his-face, Oliver Queen would die?
I'm assuming he will. And here's my theory. Have you been keeping up with Arrow?
No.
Okay, so they introduced Amico as his unknown, until now, half-sister.
Oh.
And he, you know, like, Ollie is no longer Green Arrow. He's, like, working with the cops, kind of, because of everything that's happened. But, like, we get this new Green Arrow who's in town and no one knows who it is. And it turns out to be Amico, his sister. And so I'm like, okay, so halfway through next season we'll have Crisis. And we kill off Ollie.
Right.
And then the rest of the season is Amico kind of taking over, and they decide whether or not that show has legs.
Okay.
And my guess is it doesn't. Not because she's a bad actress or anything like that, but just it would become the same story, right?
Right.
And so my gut says that, like, we end the season with she's out there and she can guest star and stuff or end up on Legends or whatever it is. And then we move bits of cast over to Batwoman.
Fair enough.
Because, you know, Batwoman being Gotham on the same Earth, you can have all the Argus stuff there if you need to.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's the way it's going to go. Like, I think next season is Arrow's last season, and Ollie dies in the crossover. Like, that's my official bet.
I will I was going to say I will hold you to it, but that's meaningless. I will remind
Right.
you. I will remind you of
Yeah,
this
we'll find
pattern.
out.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, it looked like just from the last crossover, I thought they're going to do Crisis, but it won't be Barry who dies. It'll be Ollie.
Well, and the thing is, in Crisis, it's both Barry and Kara who dies, and I'm like, they can't do that.
Right.
I mean, they could, and that was the thing. Like, I actually, like, I was like, you know, like, the really brave thing, right, would be to announce renewals, and then halfway through, be like, well, all three of them die.
Yikes.
And you end up with, like, you just cancel Arrow, basically, you have Batwoman, you do a Superman show, and you have Nora stay in the present.
Huh.
As, like, the new Flash, because
right.
we've gotten Kid Flash. Just the actor's gone.
Fuck off, Kid Flash, they said.
But, like, I was like, that you just completely stealth redo it. Like, you're just like, even Legends. Just like, fuck it, Legends is gone, and now we have a Legion show, because Nora has ties.
Ooh.
Like, I was like, you could completely just reset everything if you did it, and it would be kind of impressive.
Yes, it would.
But I don't think they're going to do it. I think they're going to merge some of the worlds. I don't know if they're going to pull the trigger on Black Lightning yet.
Yeah, I don't know.
I hope they will.
Me too.
I know that they're not going to do it with the streaming shows. Just because media matters. Like, you can't say, we're going to have the stuff that counts, but you have to pay for it, you know?
Exactly.
But I think that we're going to see a merging of a bunch of stuff, partially so we can do smaller crossovers.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you do Supergirl is now on this whole Earth, then you can do the Supergirl-Batwoman stuff, which they kind of set up.
Right.
And it lets you do smaller crossovers again instead of... Because after Crisis, they're not going to want to keep doing these every year. They need a break.
You'd think so.
But if they still, like every December, you have some crossovers, right? It could be interesting.
True.
You
but,
just don't
you know,
have to
they,
do them the same way.
They might run out of big ideas and just be like, you know, Barry goes over to Kara's house for pancakes or something.
I'd watch it.
Me too.
I mean, and, well, the thing is, that, like, there are still a bunch of DC crossovers, which I believe last time we were talking about, I was talking about how they were kind of setting up for the whole Sun Eater thing, and I think I called it Blackest Night, which is wrong. It's Final Night. Blackest Night is... Frank pointed out to me that he was, like, yelling at the podcast. Blackest Night is a different crossover. But yeah, it's the Darkest Night where the sun goes out. They could do that. There's, you know, I mean, they're not going to do, like, Millennium. They've already kind of done Invasion.
Mm-hmm.
But there's Zero Hour, which would be a terrible idea to do. There's, you know, Final Crisis, which would be a terrible idea to do yet.
Yeah, I don't even know.
Zero Hour was the first big crossover after the original Crisis, which is why it comes to mind.
Okay.
And it basically, after they did Crisis in the comics, they didn't do it clean.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was supposed to be, here's a whole new timeline, right?
Right.
But a bunch of writers kind of snuck in things that were like, well, but also this kind of survived. And it created timeline issues,
mm-hmm.
which no one really cared about. But they decided to get another crossover out of it by essentially doing like, well, here's Zero Hour. We're going to fix all of the remaining issues from Crisis. Which didn't actually do that and caused more problems. You think they would learn.
You'd think they would, but they don't. I mean, I don't know. It just seems to be... unintended weird consequences, you know, seem to work both within superhero storylines and within sort of the meta story of superhero storyline,
right.
which is people who do all sorts of dumb shit and then or good cool shit and then, you know, corporate decides to like.
I mean, and again, from a meta point of view, both with both Marvel and DC,
yeah,
frankly,
yes,
and more DC than Marvel because there's just a longer run up for it.
Mm-hmm.
They were like DC was not built as a cohesive universe. It wasn't a universe with like internal continuity between like characters for decades. You know, it's like you didn't really have that happening for quite some time, and then it slowly grew. And then, of course, they would do things like, well, during Crisis, like they bought the Carlton characters. So suddenly you had, like, Blue Beetle. He's always been there. Don't worry about it. But, like, that screws up what continuity you have. And so they've always had that problem.
Right.
You know, Marvel wasn't really... It was fairly quickly. But it wasn't quite from the jump.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, people tend to forget that. And so it means that all of us, but especially with DC, it means all of the continuity is really kind of just tape and string.
Did you ever come across Alan Moore's pitch for, like, a kind of a crisis event?
Well, there was the thing that became Watchmen.
Right. But
and then there was the Twilight of the Heroes thing?
Yeah. But he had a pitch, basically a one-page little pitch that essentially involved Constantine sort of at the center of the multiverse collapsing everything. All the time, perhaps never leaving a bar, if I recall correctly. Anyway, it was typical Moore.
Right.
Kind of genius, kind of like that will never work.
Yeah, I mean, again, like a lot of the crossovers since Crisis, they had a bunch of things where they were like, we're going to do crossovers every year.
Mm-hmm.
And Marvel did their first crossover with, you know, Secret Wars, and they started doing them differently every year. And I actually liked the old Marvel way, where it was, they used to do annuals for books every year, hence the name annuals.
Right, yes.
That were like 64 pages instead of like 22.
Mm-hmm.
And they would do these crossovers, so it would be like a group of like four annuals. And the crossover would just take place in those annuals. And there'd be like three or four of them because there are groups of books.
Right. Yeah, I remember these. Yeah.
Like, you know, Saga of the Serpent Crown was always a popular one. Atlantis Attacks. Like, and I always loved those because it was like, if you didn't feel like reading it, you didn't have to.
Right.
If you didn't like these two characters who were involved, just don't read that one. You're fine.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously they found that sales for a while at least would go up if they involved everything.
Yeah.
I think my all-time favorite weird comic book bit of terminology is Red Sky crossover.
Ooh.
I love the term, and for what it is, it just makes me laugh every time someone says it. Crisis on Infinite Earth.
Right.
Was the first, like, universe-spanning crossover.
Right.
And every book in DC had to be part of this crossover, but not everyone knew it was going on because of the way editorial worked.
Mm-hmm.
And not every book wanted to be a part of it because it would disrupt what they were doing.
Yes.
So part of Crisis was that, like, the skies turned red. And so every book had a, like, you know, Crisis on Infinite Earths tie-in. And a bunch of them were just, someone looked up and be like, huh, the skies are red, that's weird. And then they go back to whatever they're doing. Like, it was just like one panel type of thing and some coloring for the rest of the issue.
Nice.
And so they became known as Reds, like just these crossovers that are completely meaningless that they kind of hook you into thinking are going to be important.
Right.
But are completely meaningless for the crossover and you just skip them. But they're kind of like trying to edge up sales by including it.
Exactly.
So they are officially now, ever since 86, known as Red Sky crossovers. And it's just, like I said, the term makes me laugh.
Speaking of that, and still speaking of Alan Moore, I just remember when he had his Infinite Earths tie-in bit in Swamp Thing, where he basically said, Cthulhu's coming. There's an energy coming. It's Cthulhu or something.
Sure.
I was like, yep, man, you just tie it in every time. Way to go, Alan. I love that too.
Yeah, again, like a lot of the crossovers that was forced on people, and it disrupts things.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, frankly, like, some of the reason I stopped reading a bunch of Marvel books back in, like, the early 2000s was because they were having these constant, like, every 6 or 7 months, these events, and they would be interrupting books I was reading, but I didn't want to read the event, and I didn't want to keep up with it.
Yeah.
But it disrupts the book you're reading enough that you're like, I don't know what's going on, why am I paying for this, and just, this was the problem.
Well, imagine a young Aidan Morgan, which is me, picking up Final Crisis and going, huh, I don't understand what's going on. I'm going to get other issues tying in, and that'll explain things. And it didn't.
No, it didn't.
It did not. Again,
that was a young me with the original Crisis.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I just started reading, like, because I grew up reading my father's old comics that he had, like old Marvel stuff and a bit of DC.
Mm-hmm.
Like Lee and Kirby stuff, and I'd started getting new comics, but it was like the early 80s. So like I started reading DC stuff and like Superman issues and all this, like a year maybe.
Oh my god.
Or so, maybe like two before Crisis. So like, you know, my first introduction to like Superman comics was he was working for GBS as a TV reporter.
Right. Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, it was right at that period. Jeez. And then, like, as soon as I was just like, okay, this is all cool. Like, I got, like, my first real Flash issues were all Trial of the Flash, for fuck's sake. Which is not a great storyline. But, like, right as I was just like, okay, I kind of get this. I like this whole setup. These are cool characters. And then just wham, fucking Crisis hits. And it was kind of cool because I didn't know any of these characters. And where that weirdly worked was when they spun out stuff from Crisis, like with the Cotton characters, right? Like, there's a new Blue Beetle book by Len Wein. And there's, like, this question book. And there's, you know, all this stuff that wasn't a part of DC before this.
Ah.
But was now. I had no clue.
Oh, okay.
Like, when, like, Blue Beetles show up in Crisis, I don't know who these characters are. I don't know that they're just brand new to DC. I'm just like, these look like cool characters. So when the book came out, I was just like, I want to keep reading this guy. Which is fantastic, right? So it actually kind of worked, because, like, I hadn't been so cemented. Like, I mean, again, like, I'd seen the Superman movie, I'd seen the Batman TV show, like, you have that sense of who some of these big characters are, because cultural osmosis. But I wasn't hooked into this is the way they work.
Right.
So Crisis, like, coming in just before it enough to, like, kind of understand the language of comics better. But not so long that it was disruptive, was just like, holy shit, comics are amazing and giant and awesome! Like, it was just perfect. Like, I credit that sort of thing with, like, part of why I absolutely, like, I think I do love DC as a universe more than Marvel. Just because I came into that, like, perfect timing to get, like, sucked into, this is the biggest thing ever! Oh my god! Like, it was just amazing. And, like, because I remember, like, when I started reading Crisis, like, I couldn't find all the issues. Because I wasn't really going to, like, comic book stores much then. You know, it's like newsstand stuff and occasionally a comic book store. So, like, I think I missed, like one or two issues. I had to, like, go find them. It was a whole thing. I do kind of miss those days. Anyway, moving away from that weirdness.
Wow, okay.
But
no, but good talk. Good talk early days of comics.
Yeah, sorry about that. Sorry.
I was going to say, when I called myself young Aiden Morgan reading Infinite Crisis, I was not young.
No.
I was still old.
I was just letting that slide.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Just let the viewers figure. You're like 20. It's fine.
I was probably older. Anywho, we were talking about other things now.
Yeah, no, because you saw the new Amy Poehler thing, right?
Yeah, Amy Poehler, Natasha Lyonne, and Leslie Headland. The Netflix series. I don't know if it's a limited series, as they call it, Russian Doll.
Right.
Which is. It's a pretty even collaboration between Headland, Poehler, and Lyonne. Like, they all are involved in it, and I think Natasha Lyonne has written some of the episodes and directs the last one, and it is essentially, I mean, it fits into the Groundhog's Day genre. It's weird that a movie becomes a genre, but at this point,
but it really did, yeah,
obviously, but it's not exactly the same. Like, if you're calling Groundhog's Day, this is more like Edge of Tomorrow than Groundhog's Day, because she's at a party, and then she leaves and she gets hit by a taxi, and then she goes straight back to the first moment that we see her, and it just keeps on happening, and she dies, like, in tons of different ways. There's a montage, maybe in the first or second episode, when she's trying to leave the party and trying to get down the stairs out of the building, but she just keeps on tripping and, like, breaking her neck. And it is surprisingly funny, in the same way that watching Tom Cruise die repeatedly was kind of funny.
Right, like the Groundhog Day episode of Supernatural, you know.
Yes.
Which is still just one of those that I just adore. And just for that, like, terrible, like, how is Dean going to die stupidly in the next 10 minutes? Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And then, so they get some mileage out of that. And one of the things I really like about this, out of 8 half-hour episodes, is that pretty much every time you think, well, they're going to exhaust this premise, they find something new. They take it a different direction, and you get a different sort of... You get, like, a different take on the situation. And I won't spoil anything that you won't see in the trailer,
Right.
So what happens is in the trailer, I think it's in the end of the third episode, she gets into an elevator, she's trying to find somebody, and the elevator breaks and it's plummeting to its death. And she turns to the guy next to her and says, "Why aren't you freaking out? You know, we're going to die." And he says, "Yeah, it's okay. I die all the time." And then the whole show changes again because all of a sudden there's somebody else.
Right.
And then they have to sort of figure out the connections and how to sort of escape from essentially karma. And it actually also occurred to me that this is The Good Place as well.
That's fair. I mean, well, and the time loop episode is a staple of genre TV, right?
Exactly.
Like, I mean, Legends did one of the best I've seen in a while.
Oh my god, yes.
I've been rewatching Eureka, weirdly enough.
Oh, yeah.
And I have all my old problems with the show.
Sure.
Which is, that, like, in the Warehouse 13 Eureka days, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was one of those, like, all the Warehouse 13 episodes felt like the problems were very personal. Like, it was like one of them would be hurt. Type of thing. And Eureka, it's always the city. So it always had this remove to it.
Yeah.
But also Eureka's just, it's a fun, you know, lighthearted show for the most part.
Absolutely.
But I actually just caught their time loop episode.
Oh. I don't remember the time loop episode now.
Yeah, it's the one where they end up killing off Stark.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say it's the one where they were caught in a time loop. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's that too. But yeah, no, it's like, and it just, I don't know, like, I like a good time loop episode.
Oh, me too.
But they're really hard to pull off, and doing a time loop TV show, I was just like, I've been kind of fascinated and kind of like, I don't want to watch it because it's not going to live up to it.
It's I think it's a really great show. I'm wondering if I watched it again, like some of the things that they sort of hint at, they kind of just leave behind. But I don't think that's a problem with the show. They're just like ready to move on to the next thing. So suddenly the next thing sort of comes around the corner, and they just don't have time to really sort of deal with all the threads. But that's just fine because Natasha Lyonne is great in it. In fact, all the cast members are great, and I like the sort of the milieu as well. It's basically takes place at this sort of New York, in this New York bohemian scene, which I don't even know if it really exists anymore in the way that they have it in the show. But I don't care.
You know, that's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I'm like, can these people afford to live in these neighborhoods? But I don't.
Oh,
care.
Don't worry about it.
You know, don't worry about it. Exactly. Yeah, it's just. It's a delightful show, and I don't want to talk about it too much because I don't want to ruin anybody's experience.
Not fair.
Yeah.
It's one of those, like, I might get to, I might not.
Right. And, I mean, it's under 4 hours out of your life, and each one is constructed well enough that you're pretty much ready to hit the play button on the next episode.
That's fair.
Yeah. Unlike, say, a second season of The Punisher.
Oh, Jesus.
Which I feel is punishing me. For watching.
And again, like, just stop watching. Like, that was the thing. It's like, Iron Fist didn't finish the second season.
Yeah.
Luke Cage didn't finish the second season. Daredevil never went back to the third. Like, I just...
Fair enough.
I used to be that kind of like, well, I've already watched, like, half. I might as well keep watching it. And I was like, why?
Yeah. I know. Yeah, I don't... I think in the case of, like, for example, Luke Cage second season, I stopped watching because I'm like, okay, I get it. I'm good. Same deal with... with Iron Fist, I'm like, I don't need to see any of this. But with The Punisher, for some reason, partly because I really enjoyed the first season, I thought it was actually did a good job with talking about, like, oh, it's subjects of, like, trauma and redemption and all that.
Okay.
But this one is just, I'm kind of watching it because it's so ungainly and bad. And certain parts of it work. Certain storylines work and certain storylines just don't in the least. So they just make no sense at all and they're boring. Anything to do with Jigsaw is just the worst. I'm watching it out of awe that they thought this was dramatically interesting material.
Fair.
And anything to do with the... there's this sort of, like, preacher guy. I think we're supposed to... whenever I see that, I think we're also all supposed to think of Night of the Hunter. So I should, you know, good on them for reminding me of my favorite movie. I like that. And that's not bad. But the problem is that they don't know how to balance the two storylines, so they just kind of bring it back in to, like, sort of keep, not even keep that storyline going, but just to, like, they don't know what to do with it, so they just find things for the characters to do to kill time. It's almost like they're in a waiting room somewhere and they're waiting for something to happen. And every so often the show comes in and says, here's a magazine with some like half done like crossword puzzles, like fucking finish that.
Right.
And then going away again. So that is, it's kind of, I'm fascinated by how bad this is. And I'm on episode 9, so I'm pretty close to the end.
Yeah.
You know. So if, obviously I'm not recommending it. It is not my pick of the week. Russian Doll is my pick of the week.
I get it. I just... Eh.
I get you, get it. I'll probably finish this up and not feel good about myself. That's my guess.
Yeah, I can't.
You can't do it. I don't blame you.
I haven't seen the Punisher show at all anyway.
Ah. And really, frankly, anything after Punisher Warzone is a complete letdown when it comes to the Punisher.
I can see that.
Have you seen Punisher Warzone?
Yes.
Yes. I mean that is pretty much the gold standard of Punisher, visual Punisher media.
Agree.
Because, I mean, the first one, the Thomas Jane one, not so good. Just kind of dumb.
Yeah.
But this and the show, yeah. But Punisher Warzone, just delightful. Just ridiculous and delightful.
No, it was fun. I'm not a fan of the Punisher.
Yeah. No, I don't blame you. But I do find it, one thing I found really weird about or interesting about Punisher Warzone is that it came out, now maybe we've talked about this before, but it came out in like a sort of a watershed year for superhero movies. Because it was 2008, which was the same year as The Dark Knight and Iron Man.
Right.
So it was sort of, it was like the three different sort of visions for superhero media sort of coming up at once. And we all know which formula seemed to be the best or seemed to work the best.
Oh.
Because Punisher Warzone did not get a sequel. I'll say that much.
No, it did not. And, you know, and Zack Snyder suddenly going like, oh, I should just do everything. It's like, no, dude, please don't.
Stop it. Yeah, when did Man of Steel show up?
Christ, I forget. 2011?
Oh, I think, I'm just, hold on.
I'm just pulling that out of my head, like, that feels right? 2012?
It does, I want to say. Oh, it says here 2013.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh, a little bit later than I thought.
Me too. You think it feels like we should have known better by then?
Well, I mean, and again, like I know we've talked about this before. But like, I was a Man of Steel apologist for like a couple weeks.
Yeah, a couple. No, I remember when it first came out. I was like, oh, this is not bad. I wasn't like I agreed with everything, but I rewatched it later, and everything, pretty much everything that I was found impressive the first time, I was like, wait a sec.
See, I know it did it for me. Like, and that's the thing, right? Like, I was the same way with Superman Returns, and I was the same way with Crystal Skull.
Hmm.
Was it for a couple weeks after each movie? I was like, they weren't bad. I don't know what your problem is. And then I would go back and, like, think about them, and I'd be like, no, actually. And really what it is that there are certain franchises, and, you know, that have, like, certain just childhood keys that, like, if I go and sit in a dark movie theater and you start playing the Indiana Jones theme, or you start, like, with Superman Returns, you start doing, like, those old Superman credits and playing the John Williams theme. And not as much of Man of Steel, obviously, because it was very different,
but
there's still that key of, like, oh, it's a Superman thing. Like, it just sucks me into kid mode, and I'll just enjoy the hell out of it.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And sometimes I feel like we are applying our adult lenses to movies that may not even be meant to withstand that kind of scrutiny, but
well, and
at the same time,
the Star Wars prequels, right? Like,
well, exactly.
There are a bunch of kids who watch those and love them, which means that they're perfect. Like, they're just as, you know, I don't like them. I've tried rewatching them, actually.
Oh, as have I. I've given it a shot.
And I don't like them at all, but that doesn't, like, if kids, like, if this is what got them into Star Wars and they love Star Wars now, then more power to them. Like,
yeah.
I don't give a crap. I don't know. I find more and more that I don't care if a movie is good, you know, for whatever version of good we're talking, because there's so many different values for that.
True.
So much as just, like, did it entertain the people who it entertained?
Right.
And there are exceptions, like Man of Steel. I'm like, no, that was a piece of crap. And because it got the core of the character wrong.
It did.
But again, I know people who absolutely love it. I'm like, more power to them.
Yep. Oh, exactly.
That's fine.
And I could see there are some things I do enjoy about Man of Steel. I really liked the vision of Krypton. I like the John, was it John Byrne? That sort of, if I recall, that sort of those.
No, he did the very, very cold, just scientist. You know.
Ah.
No, the action movie version of Krypton didn't work for me, I gotta say. No.
I didn't mind. I liked the sort of the heavy metal look of the planet. That was, I just thought for, just because it was so very different from how we normally view Krypton. Yeah.
I mean, in a lot of ways it was better than the Marlon Brando thing, right? So.
Sure.
That. Yeah, that's a thing. Anyway. God.
And it's also it is better than the show Krypton.
Which I haven't seen. Again, I know people who love, who love Gotham too, and I can't stand it.
Yeah, I tried a few episodes of Krypton. It was not for me. And similarly, Gotham is not really for me either.
And again, that's fine. It can be for other people. God, sorry, I'm apparently just in a go along type of mood. I don't know what's happening.
That's okay. Hey, I've been watching the second season of Siren.
Jesus, I got a second season?
I know. I was amazed. Because I watched the first half of last season, then I checked out because I'm like, I can't do this.
Right. I mean, I started off being very sad that it wasn't a show about people who just had sirens for heads.
I know.
And it was just a lot of, like, screaming and wailing for the entire show. Flashing lights. That was it. Like, but it wasn't that. So I was just like, fuck it.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe with subtitles to, like, for people who can speak siren. Yeah. No, this is, it's just a couple episodes into season two, and I've just been, I am eternally curious about it, because it is such a weird-ass show, and so I'm like, sure, I'll try it out, and it's a bunch of people, most of whom are, like, probably Australians, I'm guessing, I don't know, sort of wandering around the woods, going at each other, because they're sirens, and they're, you know, they're not exactly very articulate, so that's... There's a lot of that. It's weird.
Sorry, I don't know why sirens reminded me. But, fuck, did you catch the trailer for Hobbs and Shaw?
I have not looked at it yet.
I'm sorry, the actual title. Fast and the Furious Present, or Fast and the Furious Production? I forget how they're doing
it. Yeah, Hobbs and Shaw. Which just sounds like Calvin Hobbes to me. Which
I've made that joke, God knows. I think everyone has now, and I'm not taking away from it. I'm just like,
it's a pretty easy leap to that joke.
Yeah, no, Fast and the Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw.
Wow,
it is so Fast and the Furious, it's hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also see where they're trying to not be Fast and the Furious.
Interesting.
Like, there's obviously, like, just in the preview, like, there's less. There were still cars and vehicles, but it feels like there's less of them.
Oh. Interesting.
And of course, it's that, like, you know, they have to team up, but they also don't really like each other. Yay! But the most amazing bit is Idris Elba plays the bad guy.
Yes.
And
yes,
he flat out gets superpowers.
I saw that. I have seen that portion, because that has been sort of splashed across anywhere there are memes and GIFs available for my eyes. Yeah, I was.
Yeah, like, we're flat out told. He's like, you know, okay, well, now you're going to be bulletproof and super strong. I'm just like, holy shit, we're doing the thing.
Yeah.
it feels like we're one step closer to Fast and Furious 10 taking place in space. That's all I'm saying.
Sure.
I am. Right. I mean, that thing is like, I don't think it's the same writer who, like, wrote, like, all the Fast and Furious movies to date. Like, it's somebody else. But it feels very much like it's just more ridiculousness in that same vein. And I'm like, that's all I want out of these. Like, that's what I enjoy about them. So bring it on.
I'm just sort of picturing them going, oh, let's see, like, Fast and Furious, no Vin Diesel for this one. What does it need? Oh, it needs a bulletproof Idris Elba.
Right.
What?
Well, I also just do like, just from a Fast and the Furious standpoint, that it lets you remove those two characters from that. Because every Fast and Furious movie, like, just keeps adding on characters.
Yes.
And this lets you pare the next one down a little bit.
Mm.
Which will be nice, because it means that they could, you know, do more without having to be like, well, we have to give The Rock X amount of screen time. We have to give Jason Statham X, you know.
Right.
Not that, like, 8 wasn't great, because it was a lot of fun. But I think paring it down back to where, like, 5 was will be helpful.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, now that I think about 8, I'm like, considering that Charlize Theron's character could control, like, fleets of cars.
Right.
I'm like, we were very close to just pure, like, sort of, you know, cybernetic supervillain territory anyway.
Oh,
you
know,
so,
everyone since 5 has been more and more of a superhero movie.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like, 8 not only has, like, complete, you know, like, cyberpunk, like, I can control everything, it has fucking jetpacks. This is a superhero movie. We're done. Like,
exactly.
I just embrace it, and they have. That's the thing. It's like, they don't shy away from it. They're not ashamed of it. They just keep going, like, okay, let's up it again. Fuck it.
Well, now I really want to see them in space.
I mean, I think the only thing that would have been better, and they couldn't do it, obviously, but, like, if Jason Statham showed up and he's not playing Shaw, and they're like, oh, look, it just happens to look exactly like him, like, there was, whatever, like, cloning, fuck it, who cares? But just make it, like, Crank 3.
Yeah.
Just fold that in. Fuck it. Just play the Fast and the Furious cinematic universe, which is what they're doing. I mean, they're already talking about doing another spin-off series.
Oh my god, really?
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm complaining.
With all the female characters. Because they never get enough screen time anyway.
Oh, okay. Sure. Sure.
Right. Like, let's just go for it. Some of them will be, like, not great, I'm sure. But, like, if you can keep that basic tone up, you're gonna have this huge thing of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see the problem there.
Oh, I just recalled, speaking of, we were talking about, like, entertainment for kids and ensemble pieces, I watched the first season of The Dragon Prince on Netflix.
Oh, how was it?
It was kind of delightful. Nice. You can definitely tell, I mean, it's one of its big selling points when it first came out was, that Aaron Ehas, you know, was one of the creative forces behind, Avatar: Last Airbender, and you can definitely tell it's more of like a sort of a fantasy show. I mean, there's, you know, there's baby dragons and elves and stuff like that, sure. Which kind of kept me at first from watching it because I was like, but the
what you got against elves, man?
What's that?
What you got against elves, man? What's up?
I'm racist. Okay, that's elf racist. It's weird. They don't even exist. I've chosen to put my hatreds in strange places. I don't got nothing against elves. I just have a that cordial dislike of all Tolkien-esque sort of fantasy things that just, you know,
sure,
I'm sure you get it. Mostly because of the hegemony of Tolkien's sort of fantasy scheme
right.
seems to have, like, yeah, it's inescapable.
But you gave it and you watched it.
But no, this is great. It's there's essentially you've got this this son, this young son of the king, and a stepson, sort of their friends. And then elves are coming to assassinate the king and the young prince. But the one who's been sent to do it, she's a young elf assassin who's never assassinated anyone before, and she loses her nerve. And they have to go on this quest, and there's some adults are evil. It's great. It is
right.
it is a wonderful piece of work, and it's great kid stuff. And the second season is coming out, I think, on the 15th of February. So there'll be more. 8 more, I believe.
Nice.
And that's my Dragon Prince story.
Cool.
Are you there?
Yeah.
I don't.
You can't hear me.
Uh-oh.
I can hear you.
Okay.
So.
I can all hear you.
Anyway, I guess.
Well, a moment. I'm going to type and see if you're there. Oh, you can hear me. I can't hear you.
Yes, that is the problem. Not that you can hear me tell you that.
Okay, let's see what's going on here.
So, I guess with that, we can go ahead and kill this week and play some music. Woo! Mm-hmm.